and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a comedy podcast where me and my brother John, we answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Hey, John, how you doing?
Hank, we're both very tired. I know that we're often tired when we record the pod, but, like, right now, I've been tired for a few months, and Turtles All the Way Down is finally, I'm in the last hours of it belonging to me,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like in like, I don't know, like 200 hours or so, or maybe 150 hours, it will never belong to me ever again. And it's belonged to me for like 6 years. So I have chosen to spend these last several hundred hours with Turtles All the Way Down awake. And there are times when I have regretted that decision, but I also can't seem to make any other decision. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I feel bad that I haven't read your book because you sent it to me about a week ago, and I still haven't read it. And but I do hope that you understand that I can't do anything.
Yeah, the candle is burning at both ends, and it will not last the night. But
are there? Could you have a candle and you like split off the middle part into like a third end and light that one too?
I believe that would it's actually like give you four ends. And if so, Hank would immediately light all four of them because that's the kind of person he is.
No, I've made my candle into like the weapon from the movie Krull. And it spins really fast, so it's extra oxygenated, so all five ends can burn really fast.
Is that a movie? I'm not familiar with the movie, but is it a movie in which the krill that blue whales eat turn evil?
No.
No, that's disappointing.
No. In fact, I can't even tell you anything about the movie Krull. I just remember I watched it when I was a child on television, and I was so in love. It was the best thing. It was, and I should probably watch it again so I know how bad it is, but I really liked it then.
Well, no hurry on reading my new book, but quick reminder to our listeners, they can read it on October 10th and get a signed copy too by going to probablysignedturtles.com, the number one website on the internet right now. It's blowing up.
One of the things I did this weekend that I actually quite enjoyed was hankler fishing almost 5,000 pieces of paper.
3,000.
Oh, almost 3,000? Ah, oh, jeez. Yeah. God, wow. You're doing this a lot. I've not done yet, but I'm like two-thirds of the way done, and it's not an insignificant task, John.
No, and that's only, I will remind you, 1.5%. of the total signatures. So
I feel bad for only doing 1.5% now.
Well, I also feel bad. I wanted to send you a second box, but you said no.
I know, I feel bad, but that doesn't mean that, here's the thing that you gotta know. Just because you feel bad doesn't mean you have to do something. Like I can feel guilt and be like, it's really too bad that I'm not doing this thing and I feel bad that I'm not doing it, but also I'm not going to because I feel better about not having to do that thing.
All right, Hank, that's actually a pretty good transition to our first question. We're skipping the short poem because I read, I recited half of that Edna St. Vincent Millay poem, so we're good on the short poem front. We're moving on.
Okay.
This question comes from Matt, and it involves, you know, something that's difficult that you might or might not do. Dear John and Hank, what is the largest terrestrial animal you would feel comfortable fighting in hand-to-hand combat? Likewise, what is the smallest terrestrial animal you think would best you? Aardvarks and armadillos, Matt.
John, I think that there are times when my cat could take me.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that as well, Hank. Like, there's a coyote in my backyard. I mean, it's not really a backyard. There's a coyote in the forest behind my house, and I see it sometimes, and it probably weighs like 30 pounds, and I see it, and I think, we both know that if you're hungry, I'm dead.
You could totally take a coyote. I mean, I think... Like
no,
a,
I couldn't.
I think like I'd have a hard time like fighting and winning against a porcupine, right? Cause like,
yep.
What am I gonna do? Like, where am I gonna punch you? How am I gonna strangle a porcupine? I might be able to get away without any trouble, but I don't feel like I'm gonna win.
Similarly, I don't think I could kill a skunk. I think the smell would overpower me. I would lose consciousness, and the skunk would slowly eat me over the course of 3 days.
So, John, definitely the largest terrestrial animal I could kill.
Yeah.
It's probably a tortoise, like a Galapagos tortoise. I would just hold it and prevent it from getting food.
Yeah.
Or like just turn it over on its back.
You could hold it. They weigh like 400 pounds.
But like there's a number of sizes. It may be a juvenile.
I feel like you and a Galapagos tortoise, you'd probably win, but it would take like 14 days of hand-to-hand combat before a winner was finally declared.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
John, I met an armadillo recently, a three-banded armadillo. They can fully enroll, meaning they can become 100% ball and they just roll down a hill. One of the few animals that can do that, I think maybe the only vertebrate. And what I found out is that in addition to being able to fully enroll, the three-banded armadillo will close almost all the way and leave a little gap intentionally so that a predator will put its nose into that little gap to try and get it, and then it closes all the way and it totally will like basically bite, but with its armor plates, the nose of the predator, which is, and this happened to my friend Jesse, who runs Animal Wonders and takes care of all these exotic animals, and her finger was stuck inside the armadillo for like a half an hour,
but she lived.
She did survive.
So we could take an armadillo, or at least Jesse could.
I mean, do I have any tools? I guess I don't, because then
no,
hand-to-hand combat.
No
weapons, no punching, but no like baseball bats or anything.
It's just could you take down a coyote with your arms? And I don't think I could.
All right, John, I got another question. It's from Katrina, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, my summer job consists of scanning and destroying old files at a law firm. During this process, I have to remove all of the staples from documents before I feed them through a scanner. I have come to accumulate many mugs full of used staples. The summer is only halfway done, so more will be added to the collection. It feels wrong to just throw away all these staples. What would you suggest I do with them? Sometimes paperclips and fasteners, Katrina."
I mean, you definitely have to melt them down into, like, bullets or something. You've got to melt them down into something awesome.
Well, what is a staple made of?
Well, that's actually much more of a Hank question than it is a John question.
Well, John, it just so happens that inside of my brain, without Googling this at all, modern staples for paper staplers are made from zinc-plated steel wires glued together and bent to form a long strip of staples. So there's zinc.
That sounds like something that you just already knew, and like not at all like you're currently on the Wikipedia page for staple, and then in parentheses, fastener. Because there's more than one kind of staple.
Yeah.
There's Staples the store.
Yeah.
There's presumably some other kind of staple.
Where's the disambiguation page for staple? There are surgical staples. There's the staple rite, the medieval rite of certain German ports to require merchant vessels to unload and display their goods for sale for a certain period, often 3 days. There's the statue of the staple.
There's Vince Staples, the American rapper born in 1993.
Yeah.
There's the famous American politician King Staples, who was a Republican member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. That seems like a very low bar to have to jump over to get a Wikipedia page.
And there is, of course, the Christian post-hardcore band Staple, because apparently there are Christian post-hardcore bands.
I mean, that's actually great. That's great. That's wonderful that there is a Christian post-hardcore band. I wonder if there's a Christian pre-hardcore band. Oh, and of course, there's Staples Canada, which is like Staples, but it's in Canada.
Oh, I thought that was the name of a town that maybe Staples just bought.
Oh, God, that's a great idea. Hank, speaking of which, have we finally gotten to a point in our lives where we could buy Winter South Dakota, the town that is exactly equidistant between our two homes?
Probably not. It's property value is surprisingly expensive. We gotta buy that McDonald's. We gotta buy the Holiday Inn Express and Suites Winter. And then I'll.
Do they have a Holiday Inn Express?
They do have a Holiday Inn Express.
Wow. All right. Yeah, we definitely can't afford it.
I'm not out here trying to
buy Holiday Inn Expresses, okay? Like, that is a thriving town if it has a Holiday Inn Express. Let's get back to this question of the staples.
Yeah, so you're going to get some zinc and you're going to get some steel. And zinc is mostly what pennies are made out of, so you could send that off to the penny people and they could make pennies out of it.
That's a great deal.
Probably you get like a third of a penny out of those staples.
I think that what you should do is you should freak out the attorneys that you work with. I think you should start spelling stuff out in staples at night when they're at home on their desk. And then in the morning they'll be like, why does it say put $50 in the scanner or I will tell your secrets in staples on my desk?
Right. Good. Is there some kind of like fashion options here?
That's a great idea. You got to make a chainmail sweater out of staples. Chain That's mail. It. You make the chainmail sweater out of staples. No one will mess with you if you have a chainmail sweater.
Also, it will be impossible to take off because the staples will not loop completely and they will just bind to whatever you're wearing underneath. So,
furthermore, if you had a chainmail sweater, then you could take a coyote.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think you could take a coyote with or without a chainmail sweater, John. I just think that you need to be properly motivated.
No, but I could definitely take a coyote if I had a chainmail sweater on it for no other reason than it would make me feel super confident.
I feel like it's really nice to hear that they're using some paper clips and fasteners because, of course, those can be reused. Staple is just a one-time thing. And also when you have a big stack of documents, it's not just like the hand stapler, like the swing line that they got in Office Space, but like this, it's almost like a staple gun, and it's like shoom, and it goes through you could bind like two pieces of wood together with that thing.
I've been using a nail gun recently for a home improvement project, and oh my God, like. What I mean, I am done with hammers. It is over between me and hammers. Nail guns are amazing. I'm sure that like eventually I will nail my finger to a piece of wood and I will be like, maybe hammers aren't so bad after all. But right now, man, I am loving life with a nail gun. Let's move on to another question, Hank.
All right. I feel like we did a really good job. Katrina, the short answer is you're going to have a couple mugs of staples for the rest of your life. So it just happens.
No, you're going to make a chainmail sweater and it's going to be amazing. This question comes from Sarah, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, why is it that when something is spinning quickly, such as a fan, a wheel on a car, or a fidget spinner, the object itself appears to be spinning in the opposite direction than it is actually rotating? Vitit incerta mors certissima, Sarah. I believe that means life is uncertain, death is certain, but I'm just guessing."
John, I don't know the answer to this question.
I know the answer to this question. It's finally happened. There is a question about science that Hank does not know the answer to, which happens all the time, but he's not pretending to know the answer, and I do know the answer.
Are you sure that you're not wrong?
I'm pretty sure that I'm not wrong.
Okay. I know why cameras see them go backwards or go and slowly.
Yes, it is because our eyes are not actually that dissimilar from cameras. It's because the frame rate in our brain is not infinite. We see individual images. We do not see motion. And then we create motion with our brains. And that makes things weird when they're moving really fast.
I mean, I know I am surprised that our eyes work that way. If they indeed do. And I look forward to emails from people telling us whether or not John was right about that one.
I'm sure. I can't wait for the corrections. They will be legion.
Okay. Hey, how about this one from Emma, John, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, okay, so I may have made an impulse purchase of 527 glow-in-the-dark stars from Amazon. They were only $3, so don't judge me. While gazing up into my homemade galaxy, however, I couldn't help but wonder how the stars are able to shine. How do things glow in the dark? Space is vast and mysterious. Emma."
Okay, so my theory is that glow-in-the-dark stuff absorbs light and then spits it back out when it's dark.
Well, it spits it back out whether or not it's dark. But kind of, yes. Some things you look at, like some markers or pieces of paper, and they seem to be, it's not just the color they have. They're also like throwing out a, like, like more color than you feel like they should, or at a different, or like a different color than you feel like they should. This is especially obvious when you use black light. So you have a black light and you're shining the black light on like a white thing, and suddenly it looks like that thing is glowing. There's like way more light coming out of the shirt than there is going into it. It appears, right?
Right. Yes. Yes. I'm familiar with this.
So what is in fact happening is that there is light going into that shirt that you can't see. And then it's being re-radiated, or not radiate, I guess, but it is absorbed by the atoms in the shirt, and then it is re-emitted in a different wavelength. So it goes in, electrons do some magic stuff, and then when the electrons do their magic stuff, another photon comes out, and that photon is at a different wavelength that you can see. In a similar way, when you have a glow-in-the-dark thing, the photon go in, and then it messes with the electrons, and then the photon comes out, but there's a delay. It doesn't happen immediately. It happens a bunch, and it happens all the time, and it happens in sort of a curve from, like, you know, the moment when you take the light away is the most photons coming out, and then slowly, as time goes on, fewer and fewer of the electrons, or of the photons come out. So that's basically what's happening. I don't know a huge amount about that, but when light hits a thing, it can change the energy level of a photon or of an electron going around the atom, and then when it drops back down to its old energy level, which will eventually happen sometimes immediately and sometimes after a fair bit of time, it will release another photon.
Well, that is interesting.
Good. I'm glad.
I'm glad I know that. It turns out I was basically right all along, and also to the extent that I wasn't right, I don't really understand. Let's move on to this other question from Anonymous, who writes, "Hello, Brothers Green. My husband and I just found out that we are pregnant." You're pregnant. He is
excited.
Involved.
He's pleased.
Or, yes, we're very excited, but would like to wait to tell friends and family until the second trimester when the risk of losing the baby is lower. However, friends and family have already been asking us about our plans to have children, and some have even asked us directly if I am pregnant. Mm-hmm. Those people should be banned. They should not be allowed anymore. I am sure that these questions are well-intentioned, but I still find it hard and awkward to respond. No duh.
Yeah.
Signed off, Anonymous. This happened to us. I don't know if this happened to you. It probably did. Mm-hmm. I probably did it, for God's sakes. I'm sorry if I did. This happened to us all the time because, like, Sarah wouldn't be drinking wine, and people would be like, "Why aren't you drinking wine? Are you pregnant?" And Sarah would be like, "I don't want to talk about it."
Yeah. It's like, well, now I either have to lie or tell you the thing that I obviously didn't want to tell you.
Yeah. And there are good reasons why people don't want to talk about pregnancy in the first trimester. And that is, or whenever, it's shouldn't be up to anybody but you when you tell people that you're pregnant and who you tell. And it is super annoying to ask, and it's incredibly invasive, and don't ask.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially like the thing that so serious note, like some people try very hard and for a very long time to get pregnant and can't. And then you're kind of bringing up a sore subject. Some people have, you know, repeated miscarriages, and then you're bringing up that, and that's no fun for them to deal with. So in general, yeah, it's just sort of like, I understand why you want to bring it up and why it's funny and why we do it. But like, there's also this, like, it's kind of like, you go there and 90% of the time or 99% of the time, it's like fun and like a cute, fun thing that happened. Even if you are pregnant and you're like, okay, fine, I'll have to tell you that I'm pregnant and now you've uncovered my mystery. And it's not that big of a deal. But like, there's that small percentage chance that it's like a really, like you're bringing up a super sore subject, and that maybe we don't like, and that it should be up to that person whether or not they're going to bring that up. So
also, it's not 90 or 99% of the time. It's way closer to 75% of the time. I mean, something like a quarter of all pregnancies end in miscarriage. So it's just, there is no reason to bring it up.
Yep.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm sure I'm a little bit biased in that, but Yeah, your responsibility, you should feel free to lie to those people would be my answer, because I think they have put themselves in the position where they are going to get lied to.
Yeah, and then when you tell them later, they won't be like, oh my God, you're a terrible person for lying to me, you know.
Or if they are, you can just be like, well, that's strike two.
One more chance and you're out of the friend bucket. This is the bucket where I keep my friends, and you're leaking out the bottom, my bud.
Heck, I think that's a wonderful image that we should use more often. I think we should tell people, you're about to leak out of my friend bucket if you don't watch out, mister.
I got a friend bucket, and it's got holes in it. Maybe, what can we do to patch up our friend buckets, John, so they're not as leaky?
I feel like actually my friend bucket is not leaky at all. I haven't lost a friend in like a decade. Now, I will say, in my early 20s, I used to lose a lot of friends. But I haven't like had a friend dump me in years, which...
Maybe it's like, maybe you got a bucket and you, it's not leaking, but you're like sort of going through your life and it's sloshing around a little bit. So when you have your bucket super full of friends, some are going to fall out. It's just going to happen, and that's okay. But when you're like 37 and you have like two friends left, it's like, well, maybe I should be a little more careful with this thing. And also it's harder for them to fall out because, yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I think that also might be one of those places where like the metaphor itself is limited in how far you can take
it. Maybe. Possibly. Who knows? It could be. But there's a hole in the bucket, dear Liza, and I've only got one friend left.
All right. Let's go to this other question from Renee, who writes, Dear Green Brothers, my best friend and I shared an apartment while in college, and during that time I gave her access to my Netflix account. Uh-oh, somebody's leaking out the bottom of the friend bucket. She has now graduated, yep. And while I was happy to let her use the account while we lived together, I feel like it is time for her to get her own. I pay for Netflix for my whole family, myself, my three siblings, my parents, and my grandmother. And having her use the account adds another person to an already limited server. She also uses my profile and fills the queue with shows I have no interest in watching.
Oh, come on! I mean, don't put stuff in the queue!
That is one of the worst things I've ever heard in my whole life.
Oh, my God. It's not your account. You're being done a tremendous $9 a month favor, $10 a month favor now.
I'm shivering.
You're abusing that privilege. Renee, you need to drill a hole in that friend bucket.
I mean, you have to, if you're using someone else's Netflix account, you have to, and by the way, I include my own spouse in this. Like when I watch Netflix as Sarah, I have to be an absolute ghost. Don't rate anything. Don't cue anything. Yeah. Don't list anything. Just be as close to a ghost as I can be. And we're married, you know?
You have separate Netflix profiles?
Of course we have separate Netflix profiles. We don't have identical interests. Man. It says who's watching Netflix the moment you log on to Netflix. And I say me or Sarah or kids. And the kids, I mean, oh my God, the things my children watch on Netflix. If I have to watch, there's all these Netflix kids shows with no words in them, Hank. You're not familiar with this yet. But like there's this show Oscar's Oasis that I guess is like, you know, it works in every country because there's no language. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating the stuff that they choose to watch when they get a hold of Netflix, like before we wake up on a Saturday morning. But anyway, yes, Sarah and I have separate Netflix accounts because we watch different kinds of things. Okay, we have like when we watch Netflix together, we can watch on either person's Netflix account. But when we're watching stuff alone, I don't want to have, you know, my bucket poisoned by all the weird, you know, crime procedurals that Sarah likes.
I mean, Catherine and I have the exact same interests, John.
I find that weird.
Indeed, we do not. And I guess is Netflix confused by us? They're like, who are these people that like both House of Cards and The Vicar of Dibley?
Is The Vicar of Dibley a real show?
Yeah.
Oh my God! I mean that show sounds like the best made up show. It's like. You walk into the BBC offices, you sit down in front of, you know, the person who makes all the BBC shows. You sit down, you look them dead in the eye, and you say, The Vicar of Dibley. And they just, like, pull out a stamp that says yes.
They're like, here is our highest budget. $300. Go make it.
You... Yeah, they order like 250 episodes.
Yeah.
After you say The Vicar of Dibley.
Catherine doesn't even like The Vicar of Dibley that much. Mostly Mom likes that show. She watches it on our Netflix account.
Oh, man. Anyway, point being, Renee, obviously you need to have a talk with your best friend about putting things in your Netflix queue. That is...
I mean...
It's not cool.
It's a little... Like, I don't understand when you were living together why that person had to have access to your Netflix account at all. It's just... It's in the TV. Like, did she need to watch it on her computer? And I guess... So you can watch it like different things at different. But then you're stuck.
Honestly, I would go to the best friend. I would go to the best friend, and I would say, I will pay $50 for your first 5 months of Netflix on your own, so that you can build your own queue, and I can get your weird stuff out of my queue, so I don't have to keep watching The Vicar of Dibley.
It is best friend though. Like you're not gonna unfriend this person.
Do you think there's anybody with a Vicar of Dibley tattoo?
I mean, there's only one way to find out, John.
I know. Hold on. It's a race. It's a race. Get me to Google Images.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. There is.
Oh, wow.
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 Oh, oh my God. That is a Vicar of Dibley
really
tattoo.
Likes the Vicar of Dibley. Oh, man.
And it's a big smile. It's a big Vicar of Dibley smile.
That's going on the Patreon. Whoo. Saving that to desktop right now.
Daddy. Oh, man, I want to go back in time to the moment before I saw the Vicar of Dibley tattoo.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh. That is, it's not a small tattoo. Don't you think it's different? Like, I've been very lucky that people have been willing to put stuff that I wrote in quotations on their body. But so far as I know, there's no tattoos of, like, my face. I think it's different if it's a tattoo. Like, that is a tattoo of the Vicar of Dibley's smiling face. With the cross and the priest outfit and everything.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Oh
man.
John Green face tattoo. No, that's just you with peanut butter on your face is all I got.
Well, there you go. I think there's something extremely intense about having somebody's face on your body for the rest of your life.
Well, The Vicar of Dibley is a very good show. It's very funny, and I appreciate super fans in all stripes. Whether you're sending in clips for weird Nerdfighter projects, or whether you're tattooing The Vicar of Dibley on your bicep.
Hank, if you like The Vicar of Dibley so much, you know what I think you should do?
No.
I think you should get a Vicar of Dibley tattoo.
I don't have any tattoos, John. And
I know.
Like,
it would be a great first tattoo. And people would be like, so why did you pick The Vicar of Dibley? And you'd be like, oh, it's for a goof on my podcast.
No, I'll be like, well,
I've never actually seen
the
program.
I wanted to pick a piece of media that I liked but didn't love. Just to be sort of representative of like I don't want to be too all... Right. Anything. So this is more of a celebration of sort of liking stuff more than a celebration of this particular show.
Yeah, it came down between The Vicar of Dibley and NCIS Los Angeles.
A show I've never seen.
I don't even know if it's real. Speaking of which, today's podcast is brought to you by The Vicar of Dibley. The Vicar of Dibley, now on Netflix.
It is. And also available wherever British people are. It's just like they walk into a room and it just happens. This podcast is additionally brought to you by 527 glow-in-the-dark stars, available apparently on Amazon.com for $3.
And of course, today's podcast is also brought to you by Fighting to the Death Against a Coyote. Fighting to the Death Against a Coyote. Not totally confident.
Yeah, no. Unless you got that chainmail made out of staples.
Hank, I want to answer another question because I actually feel like I might be able to help with this one. Probably not, but maybe. This question comes from Dinah, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I've come to realize I have a major social anxiety disorder and it's really starting to back me into a corner. Then they talk about going to an expensive therapist for 6 months and feeling like they weren't making progress. And then there are a number of phone calls I have to make and emails I have to send. Some are intimidating. Others are so simple they shouldn't intimidate me, but I'm just avoiding all of it. And I know I am and I keep doing it, and I feel like I'm in such a rut. I don't know if I should see another therapist or if it's just time to grow up. I don't know. This problem is only getting worse. Your dubious advice would be appreciated. Dinah, or possibly Dina. I'm not very good at pronunciations. So this is something that everybody experiences, not just people who have anxiety problems, right? Like, Hank, you have definitely experienced needing to send an email and not being able to.
Yes. In fact, I did that all weekend.
So in my experience, and I want to be clear that I am not a therapist, and I do think that you should see a therapist. I think that you should see somebody who is experienced in helping with this. However, in my experience, avoidance does not make the problem better. At least over time. It might make you feel better right now, but it won't, it will, you're right that the problems tend to get worse when avoidance is the main strategy. So here's my strategy. Like, in that email, you say, some of these emails are so simple, they shouldn't intimidate me. Well, but they do, so it doesn't matter, like, should or shouldn't. Like, don't put that values judgment on it. Let's just send those emails today, now. Actually, let's not if you're driving. No distracted driving.
Pause the pod.
Pull over. Get out your laptop. Get connected to wireless.
Get on the internet Wi-Fi. That's on.
Yeah,
the interstate.
Get on that Panera Wi-Fi and and break that task up into however many little chunks you need to break it up into in order to get it done. Because once you start rolling down the hill of getting things done and stopping avoiding them, like anything, it gets easier each time. And you will love the feeling of being on the other side of this, and you know that. But the only way to get on the other side of it is to break it up into tiny little tasks. You open your email program, you go to compose, you hit reply, whatever, and you reread the email to get to the parts that you need to reply to, and then you write the reply, and then you send it. Just break it up into constituent parts, and once you start, it's going to feel so much better. Because I think, in my experience anyway, it's the avoidance, it's the sort of behavioral response to the anxiety that makes that I think will make the anxiety better by, like, not doing the thing that's scaring me, but often in the medium and long run makes the anxiety worse.
Absolutely the case for me. I mean, so much of the negative emotions I have are due to, you know, in part having signed up to do more than I may be physically capable of, but also, you know, knowing that those things are there and not doing it because, and it's the not doing it that makes me uncomfortable and unhappy. It's not the actual process of doing it. Like not doing it is holding me back from doing it in a weird way. Did that make sense?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of it. Yeah, absolutely. It's the like dread of not doing something becomes overwhelming. It becomes the primary experience that you're having. It becomes the work, you know, like,
yeah,
I've found that ever since I was a kid. Like, I remember being a kid and my parents saying to me, if you just started this project when you started worrying about it, it would be over. You know, like, and that's still true for me. Like, it's still something I struggle with, but that's what works for me, is just like saying, this starts now. And we're going to break it up into tiny little parts. And I'm not going to judge myself for it being hard, because it may not be hard for everyone, but it's super hard for me. And that's the way it is.
Uh-huh.
Before we move on to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, I want to share an important piece of news.
Okay.
Hank, you may remember that a few weeks ago, Sarah wrote in to ask about her husband shaving his head. Because he wanted to shave his head to know what his head looks like. And we answered, and we told him that he should shave his head. So there was a head shaving party. Good news, Sarah reports that her husband's head does not look weird shaved. And there is an amazing video of it, of the highlights of the head shaving party, because they went all out. It was a full-on head shaving bash. And we are putting that on the Patreon because
I'm watching the video
just
right
absolutely
now.
Magnificent.
And this bash is, it just appears to be two people in a room with an electric razor.
I mean,
razor.
You could, first off, you know that there is a third person because somebody is holding the
sure,
camera.
Okay. Three people is a party.
Sarah is wearing what appears to be a formal gown. So it is obviously a party.
She's wearing an apron, John. What?
Oh, that's
an
apron.
You are confused by... There is another man. Another man has shown up.
There's at least four people, one of whom came pre-head shaved, or at least pre-bald.
Oh, yeah. He's not shaved.
Balded in advance.
He's not shaved. That just happened to him over years. Is he drinking LaCroix?
Very possibly. Hold on, I gotta zoom in. I gotta go to 720p that is a LaCroix. In fact, I can tell you right now, that's a pink LaCroix. What is that pink flavor? Is it cran raspberry?
I've never had a pink LaCroix, I don't think. I'm a real pompadour.
So yeah, I can
confirm
that's a cran raspberry LaCroix, and I can confirm that this is a party, because if there's LaCroix and four people, that is a bash.
And I'm looking at his head. His head is now shaved even more than his face is, and he's
looks
got a
great
head. Good head
in terms
shape.
Of shape, I'm going to say it's an A plus. Hank,
good head shape. John,
what is the news from Mars?
Well, it looks like Elon Musk, being our only chance to meet our deadline of 2028, scheduled the launch of the first test launch of the Falcon Heavy rocket, which is the rocket that Elon hopes will take people to Mars and has enough oomph to have people on top of it and get them all the way there. And it will have its first test launch not in 2013, John, when it was first scheduled, not in 2014 when it was second scheduled, but indeed this year in November, John. He's looking for 2027. It's not good, not good at all. Indeed, this test launch might not even reach space. It probably will just be a super test. Their Mars mission dates have been pushed back to 2018 and 2020. It seems unlikely that they'll hit that. Elon Musk is good at getting stuff done, but he's not. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm pretty impressed, honestly. Not hitting deadlines, but also making things happen. It seems to be a lot of what's happening with my man Musk these days.
Yeah, he seems to be one of those people who realizes that if he just slightly overpromises, then he can get people, including himself, to work harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like he was like, "We're going to be done with the Tesla Model 3 in July," and he was like, "Look, we finished one."
I didn't say. I said not the You misheard me.
Oh, that's right. It's a huge difference between and the. Hank, the news from AFC Wimbledon is that a contractor has been announced.
I don't know what that is.
Well, do you know how when you build a building, it is necessary to have...
A contractor, like a building. Okay, yeah.
A contractor has been announced for the new stadium at Plough Lane. Andrew Scott Limited, which built Stoke City's stadium. They're in the Premier League now. So I don't know if there's necessarily a one-to-one correlation, but we can keep our fingers crossed. They are the preferred contractor for the new stadium at Plough Lane. Really, really exciting news, because as each of these little steps forward, it becomes more and more likely that indeed, there will be a new stadium in Wimbledon's historic home, maybe even for the 2019-2020 season, meaning that AFC Wimbledon are going to be back home at least 8 years before humans will be on Mars, and probably 10 years, or maybe even 14, 16, 40.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean... At this point,
will you live to see a person on Mars, Hank?
At this point, I hope that I live to see humanity just continue to get better in lots of different ways, and whether that's our understanding and exploration of our solar system and universe, that's great. But also just take care of each other, and being nice, and not driving humans apart and making them angry at each other all the time.
Hank, real quickly, I just have to break a little bit of political news to you. People listening to this will be listening to it, of course, in the future when all of this will be known. But I am about to tell you something that you don't know, which is that Donald Trump has just fired Anthony Scaramucci after 8 days as White House Communications Director.
In deeply shocking news. Oh, my God, that is amazing.
8 days. Hank.
what? Oh, well, you know, John, I'm not sad about it.
No, I don't think I will not miss him. Although I would like some continuity in American.
You know, John, you know what I want? I want to have never known that that guy exists.
Yeah, that would have been great. But that's not how it went down. Hank, what did we learn today?
That you can't keep track of this. And like, you just can't. The other day, my mom said something about Corey Lewandowski, and I was like, who? Because it's just, there's too many of them. And they come actually, so fast.
It's something of a strategy to have, like, to have these news cycles be constant. I think it must be a strategy because it's really effective in a way. Like, I have a lot of friends who've published books in the last 6 months, and there's a rule that you never publish a book in the, like, 6 months before an American presidential election because you can't get any media to cover it because the only thing that the media is talking about is politics. And the genius of what's happened in the Trump administration, I mean, you can say a lot of bad things about it, and we have, but the genius of it is that it has taken that 6 months before presidential election and extended it infinitely. So now you also can't get any media attention for your new book because people are too busy talking about the events of the day.
Yeah, well,
because the events of the day are always perpetually dramatic and astonishing.
Yeah, yeah. And dramatic is the word, because it doesn't necessarily have a significant effect on things, but it is dramatic and it is sort of amazing. And it's not just, it's everything. Like, there, in previous years, we've had the ability to, like, when a famine on the level of the one that is happening right now in Sudan could get some traction, and there's just no space for it. Nobody's hearing about
cholera in Yemen. There's no space. Yeah, no, that's very true. And it's true for every news story that doesn't start Donald Trump today, comma.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird time. But we also learned that Oscar's Oasis is a children's television program with no words.
Well, I learned that. I have a feeling that you knew that quite well. We learned that you got a friend bucket, John, and you don't want to slosh it too much, but you don't want to not slosh it at all.
We learned that it is not okay to put your shows in someone else's Netflix queue.
No. And we learned that Catherine and I should probably have separate Netflix account or thingies so that it knows when to show up that good old vicar from Dibley and when it knows to show me what I want to watch, which is mostly just nature documentaries.
Hank, this is going to stun you because it stunned me.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Is it more about the mooch?
Oh, no. No, okay, it's good. That there is actually no English place name Dibley. It is a made-up place name, which seems so unlikely because all English place names sound made up, but the village of Dibley actually is made up.
Why didn't they just pick one of the amazing actual names?
No joke. Why didn't they just pick, like, Hertfordshire land bottoms or whatever? Scunthorpe.
Oh, God. Yeah. Wetwang.
Oh, God. Nothing matters. Thanks for listening to Dear Hank and John. If you have questions, you can email us at hankandjohn@gmail.com. We apologize for making the Trump media inundation worse by mentioning him here at the end of the pod. That's our bad. But you can email us at hankandjohn@gmail.com. Your emails are always welcome and appreciated.
I also have to apologize because, of course, by next Monday when this comes out, this is going to be the oldest news that ever happened.
27 high-ranking White House officials will have been fired in the interim.
Anthony Scaramucci will have been fired for longer than he was hired by that point.
Hank, before I let you read the credits, I just want to... Rosianna just sent me a tweet from @sarcasticrover. The Mars rover,
sure.
who is professionally sarcastic, who tweeted, "Mars is so far away from Earth that we only just heard about Scaramucci getting hired as communications director. Congratulations."
I'm sure everything's going great. This podcast is produced by Rosianna Hulse Rojas and Sheridan Gibson. It's edited by Nicholas Jenkins. Victoria Bongiorno is our head of community and communications and handles all of our Patreon stuff, which you can go over and check our great Patreon where you can see that Vicar of Dibley tattoo and also the dude getting his head shaved. If you want to email us, that's at hankandjohn@gmail.com. We are on Twitter. John's John Green. I'm Hank Green. This music that you're hearing is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.